The topic, Elizabethan lyric. Introduction. Next to drama, lyrical poetry was the most popular, significant, and representative literary genre of the Elizabethan age. In the 16th century, particularly in the last two decades, there was a tremendous outburst of lyrical expressions, and the whole air was thick with ear-filling melodies of the songsters of the age. England, Maryland, and Louis Watts was a nest of singing birds. The generation of the lyrical spirit in the Elizabethan England may be explained by reference to the break which consequent upon the Renaissance. England registered with the murky Middle Age, a period too steeped in religious spirit to hold a brief for that passionate abandon which is the soul of lyricism. The Elizabethan felt themselves to be free, and this sense of freedom found a suitable medium in the writing of song and lyrics, which did not require much of discipline, either emotional and artistic. The Elizabethan thought intensely, lived intensely, and wrote intensely. Intensity was the thing, and this intensity has naturally enough a recourse to lyricism. Moreover, there were Italian and French precedent not to the to be discredited in an age which gloated in copying the foreign modes in writing as well as behaving. Some Italian and French strain are easily discernible in the rich orchestration of Elizabethan lyric poetry. Lyrics and song become the order of the day, Lewis observed, and the song was everywhere sung in hall and parlor and told along the road. It was in town and in the country, on the stage and in romance. It filled a whole collection. Some poet specialized in it. England, destitute of the plastic arts, became the impassioned lover of song. Variety of themes and treatment. The lyrical impulse of the Elizabethan found expression in the great variety of topics and poetic forms. Some of these forms are the pastoral lyrics, sonnet and sonnet sequence, the formal odd, epithalamian, madrigal, canzone, roundelay, catch, and lyrical elegy or the dirge. Thus, Elizabethan lyricists arrogate to themselves a great deal of freedom, both in the matter of theme and treatment. On the one hand, some lyrics and song, such as those of Robert Southwell, are steeped in deep religious sentiments, and on the other hand, there are some other which are frankly sensuous and even heavy with erotic in Italianism, which was in the Elizabethan era, and a sight of which is provided by such poems as Shakespeare's Venus and Adonis, and Marlowe's Hero and Leander, and even more by Marston, Pygmalion, and Dryden's Barnard's War. The lyricists dealt with such themes as love, war, patriotism, and so on, but most of all love. In spite of all this thematic variety, one thing was common in all the songs and lyrics, and that was the lightness of touch, giving them freshness and charming simplicity. They are never, to quote a critic, overweighted with meaning, nor at their best are they overcharged with convention or with ornament. Collections of lyrical verse song book. In the 16th century, there was a ranking value for the collection of lyrical verse, which were commonly known as song books. These collections were publication of men and unrefined and undiscriminating taste. The exquisite flower of great lyrical genius were strung in these collections, along with in the different production of very inferior mind. Nevertheless, these collections were much more popular than the work of individual author separately published. The value of the song book start in 1557 with the appearance of total miscellany, which comprised chiefly the song and sonnets of Yeats and Surrey. The last of the famous collection was Davidson's Poetical Rhapsody, which appeared in 1602. In between 1557 and 1602, there followed an uninterrupted torrent of such songbooks. There was not a single year which did not see the publication of one or other such collection of lyrical verse. Even to name these collections would be lengthy a task. Many of them appeared under the titles Instincts with the kinds of poetry of their own. Let us just name a few of the most important collections. They are: first, The Paradise of the Antique Devices, 1576. Second, The Georgius Gallery of Gallant Invention, 1578. Third, A Handful of Pleasant Delight, 1584. Fourth, The Phoenix Nest, 1593. Fifth, The Passionate Pilgrim, 1599. Sixth, England's Harlequin, 1600. And seventh, England's Parnassus, 1600. And eighth, last, Belvedere, 1600. As we have already said, the content of these collections are crucially mixed stuff. Lewis says, in another, equisite poem are elbowed by other which are mediocre or even deplorable, the worst trimesters and associated with the true poets. The Dainty Devices, which included contribution for some 30 writers, proved very popular and ran into no fewer than 10 editions. For from what the title may lead one to expect, the poem included in it are marked by perfect sobriety. The songs are relatively few and all of them perfectly serious. The Phoenix's Nest, according to the title, contained the most rare and refined work of nobleman, worthy knight, gallant gentleman, master of art, and brave scholars. These authors do not lend themselves to identification, but it is certain that almost all of them were men of Oxford. England's Harlequin contained 150 poems, some out of which are, according to Tucker Brooke, the finest lyrics and had appeared from Tertull's Miscellany to Shakespeare. As regards England's Parnassus, the same critic, however, that its selection are neither made with state nor classified with care. The lover of poetry cannot read it, the scholar cannot rely upon it, but neither can safely disregard it. A poetical rhapsody contained 40 poems of Francis Davidson, 18th by his brother Walter, and 65 by Anonymous, who had not yet been identified, and some lyrics by Sidney Campion, Constable, and others. The importance of Passionate Pilgrim is that in it were for the first time published some of the sonnets of Shakespeare, which were then in the private circulation and were to be printed in a body only in 1609. Some lyricists considered to enter into a more thumbnail treatment of the work of even the more important of Elizabethan lyricists is the task quite prohibitive in magnitude. No Elizabethan with even the slightest claim to poetic inspiration for courtly refinement or even planned cleverness could do without producing at least a few songs of lyrics. Let us cast a hurried glance at the most prominent of Elizabethan lyricists. Spenser inserted some lovely song in the Seyffert's Calendar. However, he is too sophisticated and elaborated so that some of these songs have almost the appearance of odes. Sidney's song and lyrics are much more airy. The 11 songs which he inserted among the 108 sonnets of Aristophanes and Stella are the best of their kinds, and they are vastly superior to the song he introduced in Arcadia, most probably because they have the genuineness and intensity of his personal feeling at their core. Some of Sydney's most famous and most delightful songs are those with the following refrain: to you, all song of praise is due. Only joy, now here you are, and who is that this dark night? Marlowe, he wildered off the mighty line, who in Thumberland led the audience to a stately tent of war, to thrill them with the high astounding terms. The Thumberland speech led, in the words of Lewis, in noted comma, his sonorous trumpet aside one day to play a pastoral air on a reed pipe. He sang the shepherd's call to the shepherdess, come live with me and be my love. Relay, come out with the song of the shepherds, if all the world and love were young. Now closed. Lyrics and music. All these songs and lyrics were fully full of harmony and had the capability of being set of music. We have already referred to some collection of lyrical works which were very popular among Elizabethan readers. There are other collections too and equally popular which included both verse and music. Tucker Brook maintained, much of finest Elizabethan lyric is found in the collection of that the musician made for household singing. For the English musicians in this period were like the poets and greatest in the Europe. Among these musicians come song writers. The most prominent were William Byard, Nicholas Young, John Dowland, and Thomas Campion. Byard's is rather heavy and didactic. Young's songs are too obviously imitation of Italian air. Dowland was credited with a heavenly touch upon the lute, and though he was decidedly a better lutenist than poet, at some of his songs are quite interesting. Campion's as a poet is much better than Dowland, and though he was a doctor of medicine by profession who sought entertainment in music, yet he was, as Lewis says, a true poet. He wrote a few musque which contained song and lyrics. Campion as a lyricist is much airy and fresh. Compton Rickett observed, Campion's songs are light as thistle downs and float away in the air. The dramatist. Some of the best Elizabethan song and lyrics are to be found in the play of the age. It was a practice with playwright then and it continued till the Restoration to insert quite frequently songs and lyrics in their works. And although these songs and lyrics have a contextual significance and appropriateness, at many of them can be enjoyed and appreciated by themselves too. Lyly's famous songs are Cupid and My Compasses Played and O.S.S. If Any Mad, George Billy Arrangement of Paris had some wonderfully lovely song. So are the Cradle song in Green Menophon, Weep Not My Wanton, and the Madrigal of Lord Rosseline. Love in my bosom like a bee doth suck his sweet, now with his wing he play with me, now with his feet. Within my eyes he makes his nest, his bed admits my tender breast. Shakespeare's songs are in the class apart. They are so different thematically from one another that they defy all classification, but all of them are exquisitely fresh and full of first-hand impression of nature. Most of them fit in with the scenes in which they are recited and cannot be properly reached out of their context. Their tone and context are like appropriate to the occasion. Consider, for instance, the jeeringly ironical line of the fool in King Lear, the incantation of the witches in Macbeth, the crousing song of Lazo in Othello, and in the some play Desdemona pathetic willow song. The versification of Shakespeare's song is as varied as their content, and in all cases are fitted to the mood of the intended speaker with a rare ingenuity and insight. Shakespeare's contemporaries do not show the same skill and imagination in the writing of the song and lyric for their plays, but some successful attempts may hereby mention Dacres, Cold's Wind and Art Thou Poor, Vimont and Fletcher, Lay a Garland on My Hearth, Hence All Your Vain Delights End, Drink Today and Drown All Sorrow, Webster's Call for the Robin Redbreast, and finally Ben Jonson's Come My Celia, Let Us Prove and Drink to Me Only with Thine Eyes, in bracket, which does not, however, occur in a play, but his collection entitled Underwood, bracket closed. Sonnets and Sonneteers. The sonnet is a very disciplined from the lyrical poetry. It has to have 14 line arranged in one of the various rhyme pattern, and each line is to be more or less an iambic pentameter. The sonnet had its origin around the 14th century in Italy, from where it was imported into England by Viotti, who modeled his own sonnet Clausel on the pattern used by the Italian poet Petrarch. The enormous and the idealistic, if not artificial, sentiments expressed by Petrarch in his sonnet were also apt by Viotti. Surrey also wrote sonnet, but he employed another kind of rhyme scheme, which came later to be called the Shakespearean pattern, after the name of Shakespeare, who also adhered to it in his sonnets. Whereas Petrarch and Viotti divided the sonnet into two parts, an octave 8 line and a sestet 6 line, mutually separated by a pause. Surrey and Shakespeare divided the sonnets into 4 parts, 3 quartet, 4 line each, and the ending couplet. The Petrarchan octave in the rhyme scheme A-B-B-A-A-B-B-A and sestet, one of the many Shakespearean sonnet as the rhyme scheme A-B-A-B-C-D-C-D-E-F-E-F-G-Z. Spencer tried a somewhat different pattern, A B A B B C B C C D C D E E. Sidney Spencer and Shakespeare were the most prominent among Elizabethan sonneteers. Their sonnet sequence are a combination of autobiographical genuine sentiment and convention. There are many other sonneteers too. About 2,000 of the sonnets written in the last 2 decades of the 16th century are extant even today. The topic, Elizabethan lyric, over.